Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we've got a great, great show for you today. We're going to be talking with two experts in terms of helping our junior players develop and build confidence on and off the court, helping them control anger and fear and using that to their advantage when they are competing in life and in tennis. And I'm really excited for you guys to get to hear them today. I've had the pleasure of speaking with both of them through just personal phone calls and also through email exchanges, and y'all are in for such a treat. These guys are amazing, amazing, amazing. Before I bring them on the air and before we really jump into the meat of the show today, though, I want to just remind you that in case you missed my news, I will be at the U.S. Open starting next Tuesday. That's a week from tomorrow, the 27th, through September 3rd, covering the Open from the parent side and really trying to get some stories from the players at the pro level and the junior level, from their coaches, from their parents as well, if I have that opportunity, which I'm hoping to have. And I want to just go public and thank those of you who have put me in touch with the right folks to chat with while I'm in New York, to arrange interviews and to have conversations, so I'll actually have something to report back via Parenting Aces. It's going to be a great week, and if you're not already following Parenting Aces on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram, I hope you'll remedy that situation as soon as you can, and make sure you follow us on Facebook. We're just facebook.com/parentingaces. Twitter, we're at Parenting Aces, and Instagram, the same, at Parenting Aces. We're going to have some fun things going on during the week of the Open that I'm there. And then after I leave New York, Melanie Rubin, who reported from Kalamazoo for Parenting Aces, is going to take over in New York and do more of her magic from the U.S. Open and the juniors event there where her son will be playing. So we've got a lot of fun stuff, and I want to make sure you don't miss any of it. So without further ado, I want to just give a quick introduction to today's guests. I'm going to go to a commercial, and then I'm going to bring them on the air to chat with us. First, we have today Linda LeClaire, who is the foremost authority on confidence. She teaches coaches and players how to activate the powerful energy of confidence, both on and off the court. And she's written several books and has been instrumental in developing some learning materials around confidence and building confidence. And we're going to talk more about that once our show gets underway. With Linda is her husband, Dr. Bryce Young, who is a sports psychologist. And he and Linda together run a website called Peak Performance Training. There will be a link on our links page. There will also be links on our reading material page to their books. And the two of them speak all over the place. They work with ATP and WTA players. They speak to coaches. They have worked with Prince Sports and done workshops for them, and They're just an incredible wealth of knowledge and are so generous with sharing that knowledge. And I know you're going to learn a lot today, as I have from my conversations with them. But before I bring them on, I want to just go to commercial, pay our bills for this week. When we come back, we will have Dr. Bryce Young and Linda LeClaire on the air.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to Parenting Aces on Blog Talk Radio's You Are Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. And for those of you tuning in for maybe the first time, just so you know, this is a call-in format. And our call-in number, in case you'd like to chat with us, is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. And without any further ado, I want to welcome today's guests, Dr. Bryce Young and Linda LeClaire, two Parenting Aces. Hi, guys, and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for introducing us to your audience, and we think the work you're doing is so valuable. Everywhere we travel nationally and internationally, we have parents coming up to us and saying, give us some things for the mental game. Give us some things for emotional management training. Help us help our children. And that's exactly what you're doing, Lisa. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Go ahead, Linda. Sorry.
I was saying we're so honored to be here, and we really appreciate you inviting us to be on your program.
Well, you guys have an incredible wealth of knowledge to share, and I know I've only touched the surface in my conversations with you, so I'm looking forward to learning along with our listeners today. And, you know, to that end, let's just jump right in, if y'all are okay with that. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about the professional mental coaching that you offer and how parents can use that to help our junior players do better.
I think that is actually one of the key questions, because what led me into sports psychology, Linda and I had both a daughter and a son who played junior tennis. So it's not theoretical with us, it's real world, Lisa. And we understand all the emotions and everything that's going on behind the scenes for all of your listeners who are working with junior tennis players. And in terms of professional mental coaching, so much of it comes down to having professionals who can help young people and their parents raise their self-awareness and understand how to make better decisions so they can use their physical abilities on and off the court.
Yeah, our approach is not the cookie-cutter approach. You know, everyone is different. Kids are not all the same. How they see the world, how they interpret their role in the world, what they want to do with their lives, how they see themselves, what they think are their strengths, what they think are their weaknesses, being able to be honest about these issues, what they think they control, what they don't control. These are all things that we work on with these young athletes. When we work with them, we really work from the inside out. You know, first we listen, we ask questions, we seek to understand. Then, only after really, really hearing their what's going on with them, do we begin teaching. And we really think of it as teaching, not as therapy or fixing somebody. We teach them how their minds work, how their thoughts and actions affect their performance, and we do it in such a way that they really begin to connect the dots. We demonstrate how what we're doing, how what they are doing is causing the challenges they're having, but we don't just leave them there with information. We then go on to teach them energy techniques and tools that help them to perform at their highest level on the court as well as in life. And I think this is really the difference between us probably and other people is that our sessions are definitely interactive. I mean, you know, we'll have a two-hour session with a 15-year-old, and the 15-year-old can't believe how fast the time went because it's so interactive.
That's
fantastic.
Well, I know with a lot of teenagers, you know, they're resistant to anything that kind of, you know, gets into their heads. And for the younger players, I'm wondering, you know, do you see a difference between working with a player of, let's say, 12 or 13 versus working with somebody of, you know, 15, 16, 17? What does it take longer or shorter maybe? To kind of open their minds to what you're able to help them with? Or, you know, is it just so individual that you can't generalize that way?
No, you're bringing up the kinds of questions that I think many parents in your audience would have. And really what we find is that because sport is the motivator, we're able to help them not only in terms of their sport, whether it's tennis or any other sport, but we're also able to get into deeper things that they definitely would not want to get into with anybody else because they're motivated by their sport. And what we find is these young people, whether they're 12 years old, 15, 18, wanting to get into a better school or get into a college and be part of a team, they're incredibly honest with us. We actually have you earn your credits. Linda and I both coached at every level before we went into mental coaching. And what led me to the University of Virginia to earn a doctorate was actually coaching D1 tennis and realizing after everybody was reasonably fit and had fundamentals, it all came down to mental and emotional when they competed.
Yeah, and we even see that at the professional level. You know, I watch way too much tennis on TV, I think, but I mean, it's even obvious watching the professionals compete that, you know, on the technical level, they're so close to each other, but it's that mental mindset that oftentimes makes the difference between a win and a loss.
Oh, I mean, clearly. And if you watch just the past weekend in Cincinnati, The number of tiebreakers that came down to 1 or 2 points determined the entire match. So it absolutely mental focus and being able to relax under pressure in the big moment is huge. What we find also is that the young people working with us, because we have had experience at every level of the sport, they realize that they're not going to someone who's trying to be one chapter ahead in the book. I mean, we've actually lived it out on the tour, worked under the pressure of Grand Slams, been in a hotel room with a WTA or ATP player at 2 a.m. debriefing a match. And so we are able to call on that, and they're like, okay, where I want to go, whether that's college, whether that's pro tennis, whether that's just to get into a better school because of my tennis, these people have actually worked with people at where I want to get to. And I think that's a big advantage for us.
Sure. And,
okay,
you know, Lisa, getting back to your question about the 12-year-old, because I know a lot of parents have concerns about whether their child would open up with us. And we find that first we have to establish rapport, of course, with the child, but that they really do open up. And because they feel safe with us, we're asking the questions to understand, not to judge, that they want to express what they're feeling. Oftentimes they don't know what it is they're feeling, they're just not feeling really good. And so by asking the right questions, by, you know, really listening to them, it allows them to speak and find their voice and begin to explain what they're feeling out there on the court or really anywhere. You know, it could be in the classroom, it could be with friends, it could be even with their parents. And I just think this is so important for young people to get this kind of help. The young junior tennis players, what they are competing in, what they're coming up against is so much greater than probably most parents realize. You know, the competing out in front of people, the emotions that come up, all the things that come up during a tennis match. I mean, it is not easy out there. And if they don't have all the tools that they need to deal with that, they're lost. I mean, we all have parents think their kids are just giving up or they're tanking or, you know, and that's so far from the truth. It's just that the child doesn't know what to do.
That's so interesting. Well, you talk about, you know, how important it is for parents to realize that their children need these skills, but from the parental side, I know that a lot of the, I don't want to say damage, but I'm going to use the word damage anyway. A lot of the damage that our kids have in terms of their confidence or their ability to manage emotion on the court can stem from their relationship with us at home. And so what do you guys do in terms of helping the parents further the work that you're doing with the player once the player is back in the cocoon of their home?
One of the reasons I wrote The Confidence Factor was for the parents to know what we're doing with them. Sometimes parents will sit in on our sessions, so they begin to understand what their child's learning, but also that these are tools that they can use for themselves as well. I have a whole chapter on for parents on what to say to kids, how to help themselves. And, you know, I'm a parent, so I know how tough it is. And I don't blame parents at all. I think it's I think kids are facing a whole lot out in the world, and parents can't do everything, but parents can do some things that are so very important. And we hear from the kids themselves what they want and what would help them the most from their parents as far as their tennis is concerned. And I really think as far as, you know, their lives are concerned. I mean, we just had, the other day we were working with a 15-year-old who his father is so supportive and, you know, the child loves his father. But he said, you know, I just wish my dad would say tough match after a match. You know, things like, you know, just being supportive, being loving, and not coaching him, things like that. I mean, it's just there's some basic things that go awry when our children go into sports. And we start, as parents, we start focusing on the sport instead of on the child. And if the parents keep, and this is my suggestion to parents, is keep your focus on your child, not on the tennis, not on the win or the loss, but on your child. And, you know, I can honestly say this because I've gone through this with my own children, and I'm sure I'll go through it with our grandchildren, but is to focus on the love I have for them. And when I'm watching them play tennis, I don't get nervous, because what I'm watching is and thinking is how much I love and enjoy watching them. And if there is a case where their behavior is needs to be addressed, that's a different issue. Then I can address that behavior with a clear mind, not from anger, but from, okay, this is something that we need to talk about. This is something we need to work on, or this is something that is not acceptable.
Right.
So it's by changing our focus from the sport, from the tennis, to the child, our reactions, our what we say to our children is going to be different.
Well, you just provided me a really nice segue to my next question, so thank you.
Yeah, great.
And that is, you were talking about when we need to address behavior. A lot of us, I think, have watched either our own children or our children's opponents so angry on the court and losing their temper, shouting four-letter words, throwing rackets, you know, smashing balls across the net. Why do our kids get so angry? And is this ever a good thing? Or is it always a negative?
Wow. I guess that's an elephant of a question, so I'll see if I can take it a bite at a time. It's a great question, Lisa. Let's start with what's probably the most gut-wrenching experience for us as parents, which is watching this wonderful child who we've raised and given good values to absolutely just self-destruct on the court. And we're looking at, I don't even know this person out here right now. Does that sound familiar to any of your listeners?
Oh, gosh, not at all. A cough, cough. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna see if I can take a little bit of it. Because tennis is zero-sum competition, because you don't have a lot of teammates out there playing the match for you, because you really are responsible for almost everything that's happening out there, our ego is just in full bloom when we go out and play competitive tennis. And the ego, as we know, wants to control everything. So what does it do? It starts judging first yourself and then everything around you, whether it's your parents, it's the opponent, it's the officials for being there or not being there. This week it was the tennis balls were wrong, my strings were off. You know, I've got a list from a coach at the Naval Academy. He used to give his incoming tennis players at the Naval Academy when I worked with them 101 excuses they could use, and they could just give him a number.
I love that. There was number 28 today.
That's right. That's right. And so he said that, you know, we have to be very efficient with our time at the academies, and so we don't really have time for that. Just give me the numbers, and I'll know what they are. But in any case, what we're working with to work through the anger is to actually come from a professional place of teaching them to have an awareness of what the triggers are, what the belief systems are, what sets them off before they go out of control. So one thing we want to do is catch it earlier so we're not just driving tournament to tournament, spending all that money and slamming the trunk and heading home again because we gave away the match. That they're actually learning something from every match they play. And I think a key word that I would use would be become an observer, not a judge. Can we help them observe themselves and their opponent and what's happening in a match? That's what college coaches are looking for in their players. They're looking for people who have a mental game foundation. Coaches, as hard as they're fighting just to have their college programs and to raise the funds for that and to compete, the last thing they want is to bring somebody in who's going to take a year of their time and be an emotional basket case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what your ability level is. We've worked with, you know, over 200 schools, high schools, colleges, universities, over 300 teams. I know of no one else in sports psychology who's worked with that many teams. What the coaches are telling us is, we're looking for some people who have what you're giving them so they're stable. And, of course, that gives us a great network to help parents with, is it a good match? Is this school or is this coach a good match for your child? Does that help a bit?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Okay.
So,
I can continue until you cut me off. But
continue. Let's
go to the advantages. The one we used to hear most often was the John McEnroe. well, he just goes crazy out there and he wins all the time and that's the way to do it, da 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 da. I can tell you, coming through that era, I actually grew up in the Missouri Valley section when Jimmy Connors was playing. He's not the most mild-mannered, laid-back competitor either, okay?
Right.
Playing junior tennis at that time. Point being that occasionally, because somebody gets angry and releases some stress, they get away with it. It's not the driver that allows them to play their best tennis. And this isn't Usain Bolt, you know, running the 100 meters in under 10 seconds, okay? This match goes on and on and on, and on the downside, the disadvantage is we know that there are at least 50 chemical changes flooding through your body, mind to body, the minute you get angry. Your immune system's just on high alert. Everything's going crazy. And then you've got to come back a few seconds later and start another point. And you've got to do that over and over and over as long as it takes. So the disadvantages, I think it really just disrupts your sense of what's going on with you and the match. Historically, it's disrupted a lot more matches than it's ever helped. Physically, you're burning energy. Psychically, you're burning energy. Emotionally, you're taking energy that could be put into positive emotion. And that's what we're teaching them. We all know that a lot of times the kids come off, either they're so angry they don't even have, they will, this is the wrong term to use, they will swear they didn't swear.
Right.
They will swear that they just dropped their racket, but the racket's broken. They will swear, right, you know, that they should have got a, you know, they shouldn't have got a ball abuse, and you're saying we're still looking for the ball. So, you know, we have to keep our sense of humor about this a little bit. They really are so distraught that they have no idea what they're doing out there, and of course, it's going to embarrass you, your parents, your partner, your school, your coach, your pro, your team, and it becomes a habit. So we actually have to help them develop a way to use positive emotions on their behalf rather than actually self-destruct.
Well, and so how do you do that? How do you get them started on this emotional management training that you do with these players?
Okay. Knowing that we've got time limits here, I'll give you the starting point, and that is, Linda mentioned this at the beginning of your show. We actually sit down one-to-one with them and do an evaluation with them, not only of their strokes, not only physically, you know, agilities, stamina, court movement, all that kind of thing, but how they see their mental game. And that really can tell us a great deal, because we're finding out what happens to you when you're leading in a match, what happens when you're trailing, what happens when you fail to close out a match, what happens when you get challenged in a match. And so what we're doing is actually getting them to go backwards and realize there are certain things that there are triggers that set them off. And once we've got that, then we can roll up our sleeves and say, okay, we can teach you some techniques. We can teach you some things on the court and your mindset going into the match to give you a better opportunity to control what you do control and to keep advancing. And I mean, I don't know of a pro who doesn't want that for his student if he's really committed to his student. And I certainly don't know of any team coaches who don't want that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, so what do you say to the parent who says, that all sounds really great and my kid could definitely benefit from that, but I don't think my child has the ability to be honest with you about how he's feeling or how she's handling stressful situations, because he or she just doesn't have that inner wisdom yet and isn't self-aware enough to be able to share that honestly?
Well, Lisa, that's actually what we do. That's professionally, that's what we're doing. I'm admitting to us having an advantage, having already parented our own daughter and son through junior tennis, the greatest driver for most young people is on some levels to show that they're beginning to make their own decisions and they're independent. That's what their greatest need is. And, of course, we know as parents they don't have enough experience to make all those decisions because the adolescent brain is still developing. It's nowhere close to mature yet. And so when we remove that, because they're dealing with professionals now, they're not dealing with their own parents. Well, on the one hand, they're fighting for their independence, and on the other hand, they don't really know what to do. They just know they want to be independent.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I'm internalizing all of this as I listen to you. So if I'm pausing a second, it's because my wheels are turning and my mouth hasn't caught up yet. So thank you very much for sharing that piece, because that's a huge piece for a lot of us, I think, and you know, helping our children to be able to honestly look inside themselves and assess what's going on is, you know, for me, if I'm able to teach my children how to do that as they move into adulthood, I'm successful as a parent, because I think that self-evaluation is a huge asset to have as they go out into the world. And, you know, of course it's going to help them in their sport, but, you know, their sport is only a very, very small piece of the puzzle. So, you know, I talk a lot and write a lot about tennis is a metaphor for life, and I know you guys are on that same page too, and I just, I think this is such a great skill for them to learn.
Well, Lisa, I just want to interject with the anger issue is to remind parents that our kids are watching us all the time, and they learn a lot about how to respond to challenges in life by how we respond to them. So if we respond to something that's gone wrong with anger and get an out of control emotions, that's what they're learning. So, you know, we have to look at ourselves as parents and what are we role modeling? What are we teaching our children by our own actions? Even how we respond to our child's terrible behavior on the tennis court, do we respond with anger? And, you know, or do we respond calmly but from a place of strength? So, you know, I don't want to get too much more into that on this program because it's a, you know, it's a longer answer. It's a bigger question. But it is definitely something all of us want to be aware of as parents because, you know, I can tell you from all the kids over 30 years of working with young people, they are watching us all the time. You know, even when we don't think they are, they are.
Sure, sure. It's a work in progress for all of us, I guess. And
oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
Why I go to my yoga class.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, so, okay, let's give kind of a real-life situation. Our child's on the court. We all have either experienced or seen junior tennis matches where there has been cheating going on, whether it's intentional cheating, whether it's just the kid needs glasses, or I don't know what. And it's not always intentional. And I want to make it clear that I believe that. I don't believe every child out there making bad calls is intentionally going out there to cheat their opponent. I really don't. I think there's a lot of other stuff at play. But let's say your child is on the court and their opponent is making bad calls, and it's not just one or two, it's becoming a habit through the match. You see your child start to get visibly derailed. And how do we as parents help them learn to deal with that and manage it. And, you know, I know a lot of times there are coaches telling their players, you know, one bad call you question, a second bad call you question a little stronger, a third bad call you start to even the odds out there and you know, make a couple yourself to get your points back. And how do you help a child stand up to that and learn how to manage it?
Oh, this is definitely an important issue, and I'm quite passionate about it because it has just come up so much, and it's a bigger issue than parents may realize. What you just said about coaches telling players that after three bad calls, then you make a bad call, things like that. So, you know, I'm going to kind of take different pieces of this question because it's a big question. And one is that parents definitely need to talk to their child about the issue and let them know how they feel about it. Now, I'm hoping the parents do not want their child to cheat, even if they're being, you know, being cheated against. That's my philosophy. And if we tell our children to cheat because they've been cheated so many times in a match, we are changing their character.
Yeah.
We are changing their lives because they now become cheaters. And when I talk to young people about this, and kids bring this up because they don't know what to do. They're getting mixed messages about what to do, about honesty, and about cheating, and about character. And so when I say to them, well, if you decide after three bad calls to make a bad call back, you are now cheating. You have become a cheater. And their face will, usually the blood will drain from their face and they'll look at me like, what are you saying? I'm not a cheater. You know, they won't have, by this point, they haven't even thought about it as cheating anymore. So you can imagine the message that we're giving to a child. Okay, if somebody does something bad to us, we can do it back to them. And so I think we have to be very strong and very clear how we feel about cheating and give them permission to be honest. Give them permission that we would rather they be honest and lost than cheated and won.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know of anyone who has lost a match because their opponent cheated and then they didn't get a college scholarship. We do know of a lot of kids who have cheated, and it has just drained energy from them because now all they're thinking about is cheating and what to do when this comes up. And what we know about energy is if they're focused on cheating, that's going to happen a lot in their matches. They're going to draw that kind of energy to themselves. And we talk to the children about this, the kids about what they're putting out and what they're attracting to themselves. And once we go into depth about that, what do you want to do? Who do you want to be? You know, 5 years from now, do you want to look back at your time in tennis and think about how much you cheated? Or, you know, have you built your character and you feel good about yourself? And believe me, these kids are so relieved when we say, no, we want you to be honest. And we can assure you this is not going to mean the loss of your college scholarship. That honesty is going to be worth it, but worth it in so many more ways than a scholarship, but in your character, in building about who you are. And then we explain about, all right, you've made up your mind that you're going to make calls and you're not even going to focus on the other person's calls. You're just going to keep your focus on yourself and what you can do. You're not going to give any energy to your opponent who's trying to suck you in, who's trying to bring you down by those calls. And it is amazing the results that we've seen and the feedback we've gotten from kids, because it could be like, you know, for several sessions, that's all we've talked about was cheating, or this has happened in their matches. And then they change their attitude about it. They change their energy about it. And pretty soon it's like, oh, no, it didn't come up at all. And we don't hear any more about it. It's almost like a non-issue. You are, when you said you don't think that a lot of the players intentionally cheat, I think you're absolutely right. I also think there are a few kids out there who cheat consciously because they're afraid, because they feel like they have to win. And there's not a whole lot we can do about those kids. So what we can do is what we do about ourselves and our own, and as parents, what we do and what we say to our own children. And, you know, I'm just so passionate about this, because if we tell our kids to cheat, we're taking them down a completely different road. We are changing their character.
That's a huge point, a huge, huge point. And actually, my husband and I were just having that exact conversation last night over dinner. I think most of my listeners know we're empty nesters right now while our son is training abroad. And so we've had a lot of opportunity to really, you know, have conversations without interruption. What a novel idea. But one of the things we were talking about is, you know, building character in your children. And we have three of them, only one of whom is a tennis player. But the concerns are the same regardless of what their interests are. And, you know, it is a challenge as parents to, especially when your child has a heavy influencer like a coach or, you know, some other sort of guide who is really spending a lot of time with them. When your character and your sense of what's right and wrong differs even a tiny bit from that other person, and your child is getting mixed messages, it's a big challenge to overcome that.
Lisa, I want to interrupt you there, because this I feel so strongly about. As a parent, you have the right, and I think you have to talk to the coach and say, under no circumstances do I want you to tell my child to cheat. I mean, you have that power, and you have, I mean, that is part of your responsibility as a parent. And you know, you really take a lot of pressure off the coach, too, because these are also good people. I mean, they're not thinking clearly. They're not thinking of the big picture when they say that to the child. But you give them, such a relief when you say that. You know, just, I do not want you telling my child to cheat. This is just not acceptable.
Right, right. That's excellent advice. Excellent advice. And I agree. I think it does take the pressure off the coach, because they can't feel good about that either. And it reflects on them, you know, as the coach, certainly. So, okay.
Well,
so
what's happening is the priorities are getting mixed up. And
yes.
And that's why your discussion, like with your husband last night, was so important. Parents need to have those discussions. You need to remember and remind yourself of what your priorities are. I remember talking to a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old boy who was telling me about why he thought it was okay to cheat back. And he was giving me this list of reasons. And as I was listening to him, I was almost like, oh, yeah, I can see why you would, you know. It was like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, that's not, you know, I could see where a person could be led down that path, but only if their priorities are not straight and foremost in their thoughts and foremost in their lives. And that's why parents need to talk about it with their children, and more than once, often,
I mean, it has to be repeated many times and in many different ways. Very true. Very true. All right. So let's move on to something a little more positive, because the cheating thing always just gets my blood boiling. And I don't want to continue on this path right now. So let's move on, because you, Linda, have written a book called The Confidence Factor. And as I admitted to you before we went on the air, I'm embarrassed to say that I have not had the opportunity to read it yet, but it is definitely on my list of things to delve into soon and quickly, really before my son gets back from his adventure. And I want to be well-armed when he comes home. But so for a lot of us, you know, our kids will come home from practice sessions, and they'll be on such a high. I played so great today. I beat so-and-so in a practice match, and, I, you know, my forehand was on fire, and I was serving aces. And they've got a tournament coming up that weekend, and they've had a great week of practice, and confidence is high. And they go to the tournament, and it's like a switch flipped. And we see, you know, the hangdog look. We see the frustration. You know, for whatever reason, they're missing every forehand after a week of phenomenal forehand practicing. What is that? And how, as the parent, can we help them hold on to that confidence that they worked so hard to develop all week long on the practice court? How do we help them hold on to that once they get onto the match court?
Oh, I love this question, obviously. And first of all, confidence is so misunderstood in the world. Most people talk about confidence in the sense of, I have confidence in you, or I have so much confidence because I played so well, or I've been winning, so I have everything about confidence is from the outside in, where that's really backwards. Confidence is energy, and it's your energy used in a certain way. So you can never, ever, ever, ever lose confidence. You can only choose not to use it. Now, knowing, or at least opening up to the idea that confidence is energy, and it's my energy, so I always have it. It's just a matter of how do I activate it, okay? And how do I activate it when I really need it, when I'm in trouble? You know, it's easy to activate confidence when everything's going well. In fact, you're already activating it. But when things get rough, that's when you need to know the specific steps of how that energy tool, and that's what I call confidence, one of the higher level energy tools we have, how to activate it. And once you understand that it's an inside job and that you have control over it, it's not, we don't get confidence from success. That's backwards. We use the confidence to get the success. And that's what I talk about in my book. And, you know, I lay it out.
Okay, wait. Say that again. That was really important. Say that again, because I need to process that.
I understand. We don't get confidence from success. We get success using confidence. That's the role of confidence. That's what the tool is meant to use. It isn't, we aren't meant to go out and get success and then have a lot of confidence. We're meant, the Creator gave us confidence to get success, to do things. Confidence is a can-do energy that we have. So if you look at it correctly and you understand that confidence is something we actually use to achieve success, then it starts making more sense. But these, you know, we hear all over the place. I mean, if you're watching a lot of tennis, all you'll hear from the announcers is, oh, you know, her confidence is really high now because she just won a few games.
Right.
But believe me, we don't want to take all that time and all, you know, all that space to get our confidence activated. You know, we want to be able to activate it now when we need it, because a lot of times we run out of time in matches, and or we aren't able to get that those winning shots. We aren't able to get something from the outside, and it, that's not what it's meant for. It is something that we have within us that we can use in any situation. All we have to do is learn how to activate it. And
is there a trick to that, or is this a long learning curve?
And, the only reason it takes longer than it really needs to is because we have been taught so much, and we hear so often about the confidence that comes from the outside. It really is. I mean, I've been teaching this now for quite a while, so I'm hearing it more and more, but still the old way of thinking, the old school thinking, I mean, to me it's archaic, trying to get confidence from something on the outside. We're looking outside for something that's inside of us. And once you know, and this is where when you know, we again have an advantage working with people, is that we will go through each step, and we have, you know, we have a captured audience there. They're there to learn. They want this. And we will demonstrate how each step works, how to activate each step, and how easy it is. I mean, we will not teach anything that they cannot do right there with us. It's not a complicated process. It's not difficult. There are steps that need to be learned, and the whole process, you know, it's a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual process that they're doing. But it takes seconds. It's not difficult. To answer that question, is it difficult? Is it complicated? No. When it becomes complicated is other issues that come in. And the focus is not on activating confidence, but the focus is on being stubborn or impatient or being judgmental, other things that can come up. And that's another issue that we deal with. But the tool of confidence itself, it takes a moment to activate once you've learned the process. And really you think, oh, yeah, that's easy. And that's because it is. I mean, we've got a great system that we were given, we were born with, that works beautifully. We just need to use it as it was meant to be used.
I'm sure that brings up lots of questions.
Well, it does. And I mean, what's so interesting to me, again, is, you know, I practice yoga, and I find that each time I, you know, sit in a yoga class and go through the work that I do for that hour and a half, I grow as a person. And then in between classes, I revert. And then I come back and I grow again. And, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back, it seems sometimes. But I do see progress. And from listening to you describe this process of tapping into that energy that is our confidence, that's innate in us, it's going to be a practice for our kids. It's not, I mean, they may learn how to do it, but recognizing that they need to tap in may take time, or, you know, and that comes with maturity maybe and self-awareness, the same as I'm going through myself.
You know what? It's more about teaching them how to do it, actually. You know,
okay.
I do have another chapter in The Confidence Factor for Parents, and you asked about how can parents help their children with confidence. And I have things that they can say to their kids that will help the child to activate the confidence within them. And because as parents we have this wonderful bond with our child, we're really energetically connected. It's very powerful. What we say to our children is powerful because we connect at this core level with them because of this bond. And so it is important, the words we use and the focus that we have. And so I think this chapter, and I know from the feedback I've gotten from parents, that it's so helpful. It gives them something, some action, something to actually do to help their child activate the confidence. And
I cannot wait to jump into this book. I'm so excited to read it.
Yeah, I know you're going to love it. I mean, I read it, and I think, wow, this is so good. It's like, yeah, you know, who wrote this book? This is awesome.
I love that. Well, so, you know, for those of us that have older kids, my son just turned 17, is it ever too late to go back and fix? And I use the word fix in quotation marks because, you know, I just do. Is it ever too late to change how we speak with our kids? Is it ever too late to teach them a new lesson or to expose them to a new way of thinking about their internal power?
That's a powerful mission you're describing, Lisa. And really, the young people want to have a roadmap, and that's why there's so much emotion and so much coming out sideways, because they don't have a roadmap. That's what we're providing them. I mean, the confidence factor, the courtside coach, the little yellow book that a lot of the pros carry in their tennis bags, and the college players, it gives them simple. It's like Cliff Notes. It just says, okay, this is happening, you need this. I had a player on the phone to me last night who just finished his sectionals and out on the West Coast, and he said, I just took your book with me from the sessions. He's on a private retainer, and we prepare him for the tournament, then we debrief, and he said, I was having trouble with my serve, so I read the section on the pre-serve routine. Between points, I was losing my focus. There was a lot of noise next to my court, so I just read over what you gave me in the courtside coach. And that just kind of gave me the cliff notes, the outline of what I needed. And we have a lot of players do. They order their CDs, like from Anger to Athletic Excellence, and put them on their iPods, and they listen to them. I mean, they're going to be plugged in anyway. They're a high tech generation, so plug them into something that's positive.
And also, to answer your question, it's never too late for parents to change the dialogue or communication between them and between parent and child. It's never too late, as long as it's done from love, as long as it's done with honesty. So I'm continually working to stay up to date with my children and now our grandchildren, and talking honestly with them. And, you know, making sure the lines of communication are always open. And, you know, as your child gets older, you can express and communicate some of the challenges that you're dealing with. You know, we may not want to talk about everything that is going on with us because it wouldn't be appropriate, but definitely there are, as a child gets older, we can discuss it in more depth, these issues. I encourage parents it's never too late.
Well, on that positive, encouraging note, I'm sad to say that we are coming to the end of our hour, and I feel like I need to now go back and listen to the podcast about 18 times so I can truly absorb all of the wonderful suggestions and words that you shared with us today. And I just want to say again publicly, thank you for all you've done for me. You haven't had the privilege, the pleasure of working with my son, but you've certainly gotten to pick my brain and have a little insight into what goes on in the Stone House. So I want to thank you so much for that gift, and to encourage those of you listening to really dig a little deeper into what Dr. Young and Ms. LeClaire have to say, and consider seriously picking up their books, or at the very least, going on to their website and reading a little bit more about the work that they're doing, because it truly does come from a place of love. And I think that sometimes in the heat of competition, we forget that needs to be the basis for everything we're doing with our children. And I want to thank you for publicly reminding us and giving us a place to go to remind ourselves on a regular basis that needs to come first and foremost with all of this. So again, thank you so much for being on the show today. To the listeners, if you want to hear the podcast, it will be on parentingaces.com later this afternoon, and I encourage you to share it with your child, with your child's coach, and go to the website. The links will be up in just a few minutes, and take a peek at what Linda and Bryce are doing and the resources that are available to us as parents. Have a great week, everybody. We've got another great show next week. Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, thank you so much. We so enjoy talking with you and your audience.
We look forward to visiting with your audience again. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, and have a great week, everybody. 2 weeks from today, I will be coming at you live from the U.S. Open. I'm so excited. So everybody have a great week, and be sure to check out the podcast and share away. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.